My name is Chaya Rapp, and this is Divrei Hayomim Aleph, Perek Chaf. The first three psukim of this short perek are a continuation of last perek and describe David's final battle against Ammon. The remainder of the perek discusses David's battles with the Philistines. Our perek begins. Vayhi li'eis tshuas hashana li'eis tzeis hamlachem, vayinhag Yoav eskel hatzava vayishcheses eretz b'nei Ammon, vayavo vayatzara al Rabbah. It was the time of the turn of the year, the season the kings go out to battle, that Yoav led the army and destroyed the lands of the Ammonites and lay siege on Rabbah, the capital city. The pasuk continues, V'David yoshev b'Yerushalayim, vayach David Yoav es Rabbah vayarasa. And David stayed in Jerusalem while Yoav attacked Rabbah. The parallel to our perek is Shmuel Bey's perek Yud Aleph, which begins with the exact same pasuk. But while our perek continues to two more psukim describing the successful defeat of Ammon, and then we're done with the story of Ammon, the second perek in the Shmuel, the second pasuk in the Shmuel perek, continues the thread that begins with the David Yoshev Yerushalayim and David remained in Yerushalayim. The next pasuk in Shmuel reads, "Vayhi la'is ha'erav, vayakam David me'al mishkavo, v'yashalech al gag beis hamelach, v'yar isha rochetes me'al hagag, v'yisha tovas mar'amod." And it was in the evening that David rose from his bed and walked upon the roof of his house. And from the roof he saw a woman bathing, and she was very beautiful. What follows in Sefer Shmuel is David's encounter with Bathsheba. Briefly, David has a relationship with Bathsheba and she becomes pregnant. David then sends Uriah out to the battlefront of the ongoing war with Ammon. Uriah then dies. Perek Yud Beis in Shmuel continues with the visit of the Navi, the prophet Nathan, to David to condemn him for his actions. David acknowledges his sin and Nathan tells David that Hashem has forgiven him. The child that Bathsheba is carrying dies. Bathsheba then conceives another child who becomes Shlomo HaMelech, King Shlomo. In Sefer Shmuel, only then, at the end of Perek Yud Beis, do we resume the battle with Ammon, with the last psukim of Perek Yud Beis of Shmuel paralleling the next two psukim in our perek. So in Divrei Hayamim, there is a two-perek interruption of the story of David and Bathsheba that is entirely omitted. This isn't surprising in light of things we've talked about before. Rashi already mentioned earlier in the Sefer that Divrei Hayamim eino misaper zilaso ela gvuraso ugdulaso. When it comes to David, Divrei Hayamim doesn't recount his disgrace and rather focuses on the strength and the grandeur of his dynasty. We've also mentioned previously that Divrei Hayamim focuses on the Davidic kingdom in the context of the destiny of the nation as a whole, and therefore stories that are related more particularly to David the man as opposed to David the king aren't relevant to the purposes of the Sefer. Comparing with Sefer Shmuel, though, here gives us a time frame for the Battle of Ammon. Clearly, the siege of Ammon lasted for over a year, enough time for Bathsheba to become pregnant, lose the child, then conceive and give birth to Shlomo. In Sefer Shmuel, immediately following the birth of Shlomo, the perek resumes the story of the war with Ammon and its successful defeat. In Shmuel, we read that Yoav sent a message to David, asking him to join the battle so that David, as the king, would get credit for the defeat. David joins Yoav, and Rabbah is captured, and the war with Ammon is over. The pasuk tells us, "Vayikach David es ateres malka me'al rosho." This pasuk is both here and in Shmuel. "Vayimtza'a mishkal kikar zahav uva even yakara." David took the crown off the head of the king of Ammon, and he found that it weighed a talent of gold, and there was a precious stone in it. A talent of gold, according to Arya Kaplan, is equivalent to 57.6 kilograms. That's a lot. That's over 125 pounds. The Gemara in Avodah Zarah, Mem Dalid, asks how could David possibly wear a crown that weighed that much? The Gemara poses three possible answers. Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Rav, Ru'uya Lanuach al Rosh David. The first answer is that it fit David, it was worthy to sit on his head, but he didn't actually wear it. Rabbi Yossi Barab Chananina Amar, Evan Shoev Es Hesaba, Dehavas Darale. That there was a stone in the ceiling from which the crown was suspended over David's head, so it looked like he was wearing it, but he wasn't actually wearing it. Rabbi Elazar Omer, Evan Yakara Hesaba, Sheshava Kikar Zav. Rabbi Elazar answers that there was a precious stone that was worth the equivalent of a talent of gold, but not that the crown weighed a talent of gold. The Gemara there further explains that this crown played an important role in the Davidic dynasty. In Divrei HaYamim Beis, Perkaf Gimel, Yoash becomes king of Yehuda at the age of 7, after being hidden for 6 years when Atalia, the daughter of Ahav, tried to kill out the Davidic family. The pasuk there says regarding Yoash, this child king, "Vayotziu es ben hamelach vayetnu alav es hanezer ves ha'edus." They brought out the king's son and put upon him the nezer and the edus. What does this refer to? The Gemara continues, "Nezer zu klila." The nezer is the crown. Edus, why is it called Edus, which means testimony? Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Rav, Edus hu leves David. This crown was a testimony to the house of David. Shekal ha-ro'oi lamachos holam to, v'chol she'ena ro'oi lamachos ein holam to. Anyone who was worthy of being king, this crown fit him. And anyone who was not worthy of being king, the crown did not fit him. And this comes up later also with the rebellion of Adoniyahu, who wanted to be king. It's interesting that legitimacy for the Davidic throne should be determined by whether a crown captured from Ammon would fit or not. Then again, we know that David HaMelech descended from Moab through Rus. Additionally, we read that one of Shlomo's wives, who was the mother of Rechavam, who was the following king after Shlomo, Rechava's mother was Naama the Ammonite. So we see in a multitude of places that both Moab and Ammon played roles, significant roles, as part of the backdrop of the Davidic dynasty. Why this is the case is an extensive discussion in the commentaries and also in the Sifrei Machshava, the books of Jewish thought. The final pasuk discussing the war with Ammon describes the particularly violent way in which David killed his Ammonite enemies. And it's jarring in and of itself, and also in light of the fact that in general we're told that this isn't how David treated his enemies. In Shmuel Bey's Perkhas, the pasuk tells us that upon returning from battle, Vayas David Shem, David made a name for himself. Rashi there says, Shakhavar es haharugim shaharag be'edom, v'hu shem tov li'Yisrael, shakhovrim es aivehem. Rashi says David made a name for himself by burying the enemy dead. Even though they were the enemy, he had respect for them as human beings and treated their bodies accordingly. So why the particularly harsh treatment of the Ammonites in our perek, which many of the commentators say was torture? Recall last perek and how this war had started. The king of Ammon had thoroughly humiliated the messengers that David sent to console him. We know that David's focus, after being told that he would not build the Beis HaMikdash, was to set the stage for Shlomo to do so by quieting all threats from the neighboring countries. Ammon's actions, humiliating David's messengers, and then preempting retaliation by attacking Israel, threatened to compromise the position of the Jewish people in the eyes of the nations, and therefore had to be dealt with in the harshest of terms. Abarbanel says, "Hemisam b'achzarias rav, kedei shekol shar ha'umos yishmu viru." David killed them with cruelty, so that all the other nations would hear and see. I should note that some commentaries do say that the mention of axes and saws doesn't refer to instruments of torture, but rather that David imposed forced labor on them using these instruments. But this isn't how the mainstream commentators explain the pasuk. The remainder of our perek deals with three wars against the Plishtim and the giant warriors that were killed in each battle, including the brother of Goliath, and a giant with six fingers and toes on each of his limbs. Notably, the parallel to our perek, Shmuel Bey's perek Chaf Aleph, describes a fourth war that isn't mentioned here. The commentary associated with Rashi explains, Av zeh mishum kvodo shel David, lo nechtva kan, sherek siv sham vayaf David. Vululei sha'azru Avishai ben Tsruya, haya nofel biado shel Yishbi, ulefio sognai lo kasvo kan. This fourth battle is omitted because of the honor of David. With reference to that battle, it says in Shmuel, Vayaif David, David grew weary. And had it not been for the help of Avishai ben Tsruya, one of his commanders, he would have been killed by the giant Yishbi. The incident obviously doesn't contribute to the honor of David and is therefore omitted. The giant warriors of the Plishtim are described as Yelidei HaRephaim, descended from the Rephaim. Additionally, the final pasuk of our parak says, Elu noldu laharafa begas. They were born to harafa in gas. They plubia David ubiarev adav, and they fell into the hands of David. The Rephaim are described in other places in the Torah as a nation of giants. For example, in Devarim Beis, the pasuk refers to Rephaim yechashvu afhim kanakim. The Rephaim were anakim, they were giants. Rashi there explains that they are called Rephaim because anyone who saw them, yadav mirapos, his hands became weak with fear. They're also called Emim from the word Ema, which means fear. The Gemara in Sota Membez says, when it says in the pasuk, these giants were born to Harafa in Gas, Harafa is a person. Harafa is Arpa, the sister of Rus and the daughter-in-law of Naomi, who chose to return to Moab while Rus stayed with Naomi. Megillas Rus tells us that when Arpa left, Rus and Arpa both cried. The Gemara says, "Bischar arba dima'os sheharida arpa al chamosa, zachsa v'yatsu mimenu arba giborim, shenemar v'tisena kolan v'tivkena od." The Gemara says that as a reward for the four tears that Arpa shed over leaving her mother-in-law, she merited to have four giants descend from her, as it says in Rus, and they lifted up their voices and cried. Arpa ultimately made the decision to turn her back on Hashem and returned to her idolatrous ways. Yet Hashem remembered and rewarded her. How much more so can we be sure that Hashem pays close attention to what we do and rewards us accordingly? This shiur is dedicated L'Zecher Nishmas Marcy Stern, Mincha Yehudis Bas Gedaliahu. She was a dedicated teacher whose deep love of the Sifrei Nevi'im and Shivas Tzion left an indelible mark on her many students.